some sad news today about a young aviator. A 17-year-old from Indiana died yesterday when his single-engine plane crashed shortly after taking off from American Samoa. Haris Suleiman was aiming to become the youngest person to pilot a single-engine plane around the globe. His father, who was with him, is also missing. Earlier this month, though, a similar journey had a happy ending. A 31-year-old named Amelia Earhart became the youngest woman ever to fly a single-engine aircraft around the world. And in doing so, she symbolically completed her namesake's flight. We talked to her in June before she took off and caught up with her again earlier this week. I started by asking her how it felt to have completed this flight that she had dreamed about and worked toward for so long.
You know, it was a pretty amazing experience. It took a year and a half to plan, and it's pretty daunting to look at a big world map, map out the route, and just go for it. But that's what it took. And you know, that's what Amelia did back in the 1930s. And she certainly had it a lot more difficult without the use of internet and, you know, all the fast-paced world that we have. But when it came right down to it, we planned the flight from Oakland. We went through 14 countries, traveled 28,000 miles, and it was a great flight. All in all, we covered a lot of ground and met some amazing people along the way.
When you said to us that you were most looking forward to the leg over the South Pacific where Amelia Earhart disappeared 77 years ago, what was it like when you actually got there?
So we flew over Howland Island at 27,000 feet. It was pretty mind-blowing to see the tiny space that she was looking for in the middle of the South Pacific. And Howland Island is basically just an atoll out in the middle of the ocean. It's less than a mile across. The government built a runway specifically for Amelia's flight back in the 30s, and she was set to land there after leaving Papua New Guinea. And so when we looked out the window and I offset the aircraft just a bit to the left of the island so that I could circle around and have it out my window, you know, I was filled with adrenaline when we flew over, and it was definitely an emotional moment because I felt it was the closest that I had come to my namesake at that point in time. And I was scrambling with cameras and trying to, you know, really take in the moment, and I finally just set everything down. And I just stared at that space because that's what Amelia wanted to see with every part of her. She wanted to land safely on that island, but she was never able to do that. So at that point in the flight, you know, it became our mission to complete the flight for her and carry her legacy safely back to Oakland.
Were there any scary moments along the way?
Then, you know, there weren't any scary moments in the air. The aircraft performed perfectly, no squawks the entire time, totally safe there. But on the ground, there were some scary moments, you know, when you're met by officers who are armed, who look entirely different from you. You know, it's very difficult to communicate. It takes a deep breath and a good look in the eye to really come to terms with someone and show them that you're there with good intentions and that you're there for the right reasons.
Like, where was that moment when you got off the plane and you had to deal with people who were armed and didn't speak your language?
Sao Tome was one of those places, and that's a tiny island off the west coast of Africa. And essentially, we got there, and I looked out the window, and I saw a group of about 10 men, none of which were smiling, and I popped the door open on the airplane, and none of them looked me in the eye. Hmm. And that came down to them being very surprised that there was a woman piloting an aircraft. And when we got off the plane, my co-pilot, Shane Jordan, was pretty much the only one they would speak to. Every bit of communication was done with Shane, who, of course, was a male. And so I decided to step forward, you know, shake their hand, say, hello, I'm the captain, Amelia Earhart, and, you know, we need to fuel up. And it was a good lesson in just how far we still need to go with women in aviation, not only in the U.S., but worldwide.
Well, and where did you stay in these places?
I'll admit, not everywhere we stayed was very nice. We stayed in some pretty broken down spots, concrete floors, very limited, bathroom facilities, and a lot of bugs, a lot of insects, a lot of cracks in the walls. But that's what it was about. You know, it was about having an adventure. It wasn't about staying in a cush hotel all the way around the world. It was, you know, taking that airplane to some pretty exotic places and experiencing things that I, for one, never had.
How closely did you follow Amelia Earhart's original route from back 77 years ago?
I carried it through as closely as I possibly could. We were able to match up 10 of our locations to the original Amelia flight. And a couple things changed where we went. One of those was geopolitical situations across Africa and the Middle East, where we just had to avoid certain spots where we're not allowed to land as U.S. citizens. And also heading through the Middle East, you know, would have increased the danger of the flight significantly. We also stayed out of India heading through Mumbai because it's monsoon season. But our route, when you lay one route on top of the other, it's tough to differentiate the two. We got pretty close.
Well, and you posted some gorgeous photos of sunrises and sunsets and the earth and sea from above. And we'll put some of those at our website, hereandnow.org. But what was the most beautiful part of the trip?
You know, it's hard to say because, you know, seeing the entire globe around the world and seeing those sunrises with the magnificent colors was just breathtaking. But one of the spots that sticks out to me are the sand dunes along the east coast of Brazil. And as we track down from Trinidad and Tobago, there's a beautiful sand field that's developed right along the coastline. And during high tide, the water comes in and fills up these tiny lakes. So there was this beautiful grid of turquoise water on white sand beaches just for miles and miles. So that's one spot that stuck out to me. Same with Kilimanjaro. Seeing that from 2,000 feet as we broke through the cloud layer, as we departed out heading over Kenya, out of Tanzania, was just a stunning view because the mountain is snow-capped. And as you're flying over Africa, you know, you don't expect to see those colors. We saw a lot of volcanoes from the ground, some of which were active. And as we flew through, the transition between, you know, the different types of shorelines and going from jungle to desert, flying over the Amazon, was just stunning. And those pictures are something that I'll treasure for the rest of my life.
Now, you had a photo of Amelia Earhart in the cockpit with you throughout the flight. Do you feel more connected to her now after completing this?
I do. And the thing is, you know, a year ago, I found out that I wasn't related to Amelia after thinking for the first 30 years of my life that I was. And that took a real tough turn for me. It was, you know, do I continue on with this flight around the world, knowing that there's no blood relation at this point? And when I decided to move forward, I thought, well, I'm either going to have, you know, a distinct separation from Amelia and her legacy, or it's going to become stronger than anything I've ever known. And luckily, the latter happened. And we did have that small black and white print of Amelia there in our cockpit. And she just kind of floated around the plane, you know, throughout the whole trip. And I gained so much more respect for her upon completion, and especially after passing over Howland Island. Because seeing how tiny that island was in such a vast ocean, she was really much, much more brave than I ever knew. And I've always had so much respect for her and known that she was an incredible woman. But seeing what she was doing with the lack of technology back in the 1930s, not only the actual flight was difficult, but the planning process as well. I mean, it took me a year and a half, and I've got internet at my fingertips. She was doing everything by way of mail.
Well, and after doing that planning for a year and a half, and not just that, but having such a long time where you thought you were related to Amelia Earhart, then you realized you weren't, then you've done this flight. What do you do now? What is next for you?
You know, it's wonderful that I had already started the Fly with Amelia Foundation, because that's where my heart is at, and that's what the true passion and excitement around Amelia's life was. You know, she said back in the 1930s that the reason she was flying was to create opportunities for the women who will fly tomorrow's planes. And that's exactly who I am. So now that I've strengthened that connection, I feel like I've completed a huge goal for myself and taken my confidence level to a whole new zone. Now I can grow the foundation and give other women the opportunity to fly. We awarded 10 flight scholarships flying over Howland Island. As we made our way through, we announced them on Twitter. So we've got high school age girls getting out to the airport and experiencing what I feel when I get into the plane and what Amelia felt when she climbed into her Lockheed Electra. So what's next? You know, another strong woman with a great experience under her belt who can now go out and lead by example and hopefully influence a lot of young girls.
Amelia Rose Earhart, who recently became the youngest woman to fly around the world in a single engine aircraft. Thank you so much for speaking with us. Congratulations on completing this.
Thank you very much.